from our microphones in downtown Washington, D.C. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We're going to talk today about the collegiate approach to victim assistance. Back at our microphones, Bill Sondervan, the Executive Director of the Center for Criminal Justice Administration, University of Maryland University College, where 95,000 students all throughout the world attend online collegiate instruction and truth in advertising. I do teach for Bill. I'm an Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at University of Maryland University College. And we have Roberta Roper. Roberta is somebody who is a sheer joy to talk to. I've talked to her lots of times in the past, but the first time on this air. She is the chair of the Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center, and she is, again, a passionate advocate for victim assistance. And again, the whole idea is, how can a college, how can a university system take victims' issues and incorporate them fully into the instruction of criminal justice personnel? What can we do regarding criminal justice personnel and sensitize them to not only the rights but obligations of the criminal justice system towards crime victims? Ladies and gentlemen, before we begin the show, our usual commercial, we are up to 177,000 requests for D.C. Public Safety for the month of July. We are really appreciative of all the emails that you're sending us, all the comments on the program, and the fact that you're following us by Twitter. If you want to get in touch with me directly, it's Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P, not T, but P-E-S, at csosa.gov. And with that out of the way, Roberta Roper and Bill Sondervan, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you.
Bill, you know, you've been at this air a couple times now. The last program that you did was really interesting. We did a program of how the university is incorporating instruction with the Baltimore City Police Department, how they're using, I guess, tools of the trade to improve public safety for the city of Baltimore. And I would imagine that, in essence, is what you're doing here. You're taking a collegiate approach to victim assistance in conjunction with the Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center. And in essence, not just for the state of Maryland, but for the entire world, considering your population goes throughout the world, trying to do what you can to incorporate a victim's approach to criminal justice instruction.
Yeah, Lynn, that's exactly what we're doing. We're trying to use all the tools available to us to do that. And as you know, UMUC has classes all through Maryland, and we teach in 26 countries around the world on the ground, but we also are the online arm of the university system in Maryland. And about 50% of our students are military and others, and they're all over the world and in foreign countries. So how we got into this with Roberta Roper was, well, first of all, my background, you know, I retired. I was a chief of police in the Army. I was a provost marshal, and then I was a state corrections commissioner. So I'm very, very aware and very sensitive to the issues of victims. And I taught part-time as a way of giving back in the classroom for years. And I always taught victimology is one of the courses that I taught. And victimology is really important, but you have to get students involved in it, and you have to make them interested in it. And I was having trouble getting students to see that this more than just a college class. And so what I did was I asked Roberta Roper if she would come to my class and be a guest speaker. We did this about the third class into it. Mm-hmm. And Roberta came to that first class, and she talked about what happened in her life, the personal tragedy that happened to her daughter and her family. And then she talked about what happened when she went into the criminal justice system. This is 25 years ago, and how poorly they were treated, and how little that they were had rights to, and how little they could talk about their daughter. And then she talked about what happened over the years and how things had changed. And when she got done talking for, you know, about an hour and a half and interacting with the class, victimology became a very important topic, and the students had tears rolling down their eyes. And it went from being a college elective to being something very important to them. And a lot of our students over the years then went and volunteered and got involved in helping victims and got involved in victims' rights issues. And so taking that a step farther, and when I became the director of the program, you know, 3 years ago, I thought, what a great way to be able to reach people worldwide and get this very important message out and make victimology important to our students all over the world. So what we did was we asked Roberta Roper to come to our studios, and we interviewed her in the studio. And the interview and the conversation was along the same time as Roberta talked about what happened to her daughter and her family, and she talked about what's happened in the victims' rights area over the last 25 or so years. And we put that in our classes. So now when a student takes a class with us, they go online and they log on to a learning management system, and they have a textbook, and they have discussions every week. But a part of that, we have built-in modules. And one of our modules, right in the beginning, to get people really interested in the topic, you click on the module, and Roberta comes on. And Roberta, you know, talks about her experiences. And then along the way, the film stops, and there's discussion questions. And the mm-hmm. students go in, and they have a discussion about the issues, and we play it through like that. And so what a great start to get students interested in the topic of victimology. And it's really, I think, turned people's thoughts and views about the whole subject around, from just being a college course and just an elective they're taking, to something that they're very passionate about and something that's very important to them.
Bill is absolutely correct. Changing attitudes and creating an atmosphere in which people can identify with others is critical to getting making any progress, and you know, that's what's so extraordinary about this whole series and the University College's efforts and our collaboration. It's nothing short of revolutionary from what it was 27 years ago.
The whole idea, I think, of this larger issue of victim assistance, we have done, by the way, a series of programs, and we're going to continue to do a series of programs with the National Organization on Victim Assistance, or for Victim Assistance, NOVA. And you know, this whole concept of victims' issues, victims' rights, for those of us who have been in the criminal justice system, we saw firsthand how victims were victimized not only by their attacker, but the criminal justice system, the fact that we did not provide everything to that victim that we could do, should do, and the fact that it's now we have a national constitutional amendment, and there are state amendments in most of the states, constitutional amendments in most of the states, not only suggesting that the criminal justice system do the right thing, but compelling the criminal justice requiring the criminal justice system to do the right thing in terms of crime victims. And Roberta, you've been there from the very beginning. Bill, you have been there from the very beginning. I've been there from the very beginning. I used to be the subject level specialist for crime prevention and victims for the Department of Justice's clearinghouse. So all of us were there from the very beginning. We saw what happened. We saw how terrible it was. Roberta, I never know how to summarize your particular set of circumstances, but your daughter was murdered viciously, and your process through the criminal justice system was not pleasant.
Well, you said it earlier. The secondary victimization was in many ways worse than the horrific crimes committed against our daughter. Very destructive. When you're parents and you try to raise your children properly, it almost destroyed our family because, unlike our daughter's killers, we had no right to information, no right to observe the trial, no right to be heard in a victim impact statement before sentencing. And you know, fundamentally, being treated with dignity and respect, that's critical. And though Americans are caring people, we tend to think that crime happens to other people. It can certainly happen to us. We live good lives. And so this way to create identification is key to any progress. And certainly from our experience in 1982, today things are vastly different. You mentioned state constitutional amendments. 33 states now have state constitutional amendments. We have not yet succeeded in on the federal level. However, we do have one of the strongest pieces of federal legislation that was passed in 2004, the Justice for All Act, Crime Victims' Rights, in which, again, there is not only a requirement, but there is the ability to have an attorney represent the interest of victims when those rights are not enforced. And so we've made extraordinary progress. But I think the real extraordinary thing for me is this what's happening on the educational level, because obviously we have to look to the next generations to maintain and continue to expand, but to keep the promise, because laws are wonderful, but laws that are ignored are meaningless. And so we need to have people in the field who understand their obligations under the law, and more importantly, can can see through the eyes of a crime victim and how important it is that they're treated with dignity and respect, and that to the extent that they are able to participate and choose to participate, that they be given those rights. You know, I personally dream of a day when crime victims' rights and services are part of the fabric of our whole criminal justice system, just as the rights of someone accused or convicted of a crime are. But we're not there yet.
Bill Sonnevan, University of Maryland University College. Now, you're incorporating this whole concept of victimology into all the different courses that you offer there through the University of Maryland University College. My sense is, and I think the sense of an awful lot of people who have been in the criminal justice system, is that even though we have, I think, 33 constitutional amendments and we have national legislation, a lot of us in the criminal justice system still do not fully understand victimology. And I don't think it's because we're bad people. I don't think it's because we don't sympathize greatly with victims. I think all of us are running at a 500 miles an hour. We're handling, you know, hundreds of cases. We're doing, you know, an awful lot of stuff, and the real effort that it takes, and it takes I think a good amount of effort to service victims properly, I think that gets tossed to the wayside because we're just running so hard on so many different things. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I think so, man. And I think that you know, victimology in academia is really like a secondary subject. It's not one of the primary courses you have to take to get your degree. So our approach to this is to make it, you know, part of the degree and make it really an exciting, hard-hitting course that has a big impact on people and just really, really grab their attention, get them into it, and make it important to them. And that was what our whole goal was in this class. And I think we've done that.
But, I mean, is it one class? Is it a variety of classes?
Well, no, it's one class, and it's a 15-week class. Mm-hmm. And it's very in-depth, and it's very thorough, but it leads students into understanding other things in the criminal justice as well. But what it really gives them is just a real appreciation of the plight of victims and the importance of this whole victims' rights movement.
Is it a required class or an option?
It's an option, but it's one of the ones that just about everybody takes.
Okay. And everybody should take. Because, again, I get back to this larger issue. You know, when I was a police officer decades ago, I would see the impact, you know, of what crime meant to individual human beings. You know, I would imagine all of us fully understand that if there's a violent assault or a rape or a homicide, you know, obviously the family and the larger community is going to be impacted by that. But that, you know, the whole concept of victimology extends to somebody breaking into your garage. I've seen people move out of communities because the garage was broken into twice. It goes way beyond violent crime in terms of our perceptions of our own personal safety, the safety of our family, which is fundamental to all of us. But, you know, again, we run hard within the criminal justice system, and I think sometimes we see these issues as just getting in the way. Roberta mentioned she wants to see this institutionalized as much as the protecting the rights of the perpetrator, and that does require legislation, I think, Roberta.
Well, that's why we have states pass state constitutional amendments, and efforts continue on the national level as well. And the Justice for All Act was one piece of that, and that we're now in the process of testing this. But, you know, without a mechanism to seek enforcement and a remedy when those rights are not enforced, they're just simply paper promises. We have to not only pass legislation, we have to change attitudes, we have to provide training and the support services that are needed. And you're right, nobody intentionally seeks to harm another person who suffers the consequences of crime, but it does take training, and it takes a shift in attitudes, understanding that, in fact, without the respect and cooperation of crime victims, the system would cease to exist.
Yesterday, Bill Sondervan, the executive director for the Center for Criminal Justice Administration. You can reach Bill at wsondervan, S-O-N-D-E-R-V-A-N, at umuc.edu. University of Maryland University College has 95,000 students throughout the world. Roberta Roper is just not the chair of the Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center. She is a national figure on the issue of crime victimization. You can reach her directly at R-R-O-P-E-R at mdcrimevictims.org. plural.org, or the website is www.marylandcrimevictims.org, or the 800 number, the toll-free number is 1-877-VICTIM-1, 1-877-VICTIM-1. Roberta, one of the things that you wanted to bring up was the National Day of Remembrance, which is this September 25th in Washington, D.C., and there is a national toll-free telephone number for that, 1-800-438-6233, 1-800-438-6233, and we'll be putting that into the show notes as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I thank you. Yes, this also represents a collaboration between the Parents of Murdered Children, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and the Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center. And our audiences are the families of homicide victims, but also stakeholders and legislators and others who work in the field. And it includes a day-long symposium at the Ronald Reagan Building during the daytime, and an evening ceremony and reception at the Press Club. And we're certainly trying to, again, raise awareness. Congress, at the urging of Parents of Murdered Children several years ago, established this National Day of Remembrance, and it's a bipartisan effort, and it's the first of its kind. And so we're really pleased to be part of it and working together with POMC and MAD.
The concept, getting back to the criminal justice system and its approach to victims' issues, I talked to, interviewed people who were directly involved in providing victim services to individuals. And my question at one point was, how many times do you have to remind your hierarchy? Now, these are individuals within bureaucracies, and they're the ones who are charged with helping victims out and cutting through the clutter, cutting through the disarray within the criminal justice system and helping these individuals wherever the law allows. And so they are passionate representatives of victims' rights. But the question was, how often do you have to go to your hierarchy and remind them that there is federal legislation or a constitutional amendment to help victims, and this is not an option, this is something that we are legally obligated to do? And they looked at me through the microphones, if you will, and in essence said, well, it happens quite a few times. I think that's
it's an ongoing effort, yes.
That's the heart and soul of this whole concept, Bill Sondervan, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, when I was a state corrections commissioner, it was really important to me, and I saw this as well. I mean, like you said earlier, everybody gets caught up in the day-to-day operations. There's so much concern about the perpetrator and about the inmate that sometimes the victims are forgotten. So we set up a victim services coordinator and a victim services officer. And this person's full-time job was to keep victims' issues at the forefront, to do a variety of things, to commemorate, to remind people, working on programs where we could advise victims when an inmate was going to come up for parole, when an inmate was going to be released, to take requests from victims' families and coordinate those requests and make things happen. We would take victims' families on tours of prisons. We did everything we could to keep this in the forefront.
And again, within a very busy criminal justice system, that could be problematical. I think the newspapers, we violated an individual's constitutional rights. Person accused of a crime or the person convicted of a crime, I think we'd very quickly be on the front page. Yet I don't see a lot of newspaper coverage of us violating the rights of crime victims, Roberta.
No, you don't, because number one, most crime victims don't know that they have a right to do anything about it. That's an inherent problem. Making certain that every crime victim knows that they have certain constitutional rights within their state, and then providing them legal assistance to seek enforcement if those rights are endangered or denied, and then taking further action. The Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center actually has one of the nation's first legal clinics to provide free legal assistance, because, you know, the crime victims shouldn't have to pay for that. Most of them can't afford to do that, and the purpose of the attorney is not to interfere with the prosecution in any way, but simply to ensure that the rights that the crime victim has under their state's laws are enforced, and if they're not enforced, that there's some action to remedy that. An example of another collaboration that we are working on here in Maryland is with the Criminal Injuries Compensation Board, again, the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, trying to make that agency more victim-friendly, to ensure that victims who desperately need compensation, perhaps to bury a child, to seek counseling for a family member, or lost wages when a crime has occurred, or the principal breadwinner has been murdered, and it's been very rewarding to see some progress, though slow, on that effort. And as you say, all of us have the demands of our daily lives, but again, this is a topic that the criminal justice system has only in recent years has really begun to address. If we had a timeline, we would be on the very first little couple of dots in terms of criminal justice system and progress and in relation to how victims are treated. Victims simply deserve to certain fundamental support services and to be treated with dignity and respect.
No argument there. I remember as a police officer years ago where a burglary victim wanted me to stop by the house and talk to that individual about what I was doing regarding their particular burglary. And I said to myself, you know, I've got 5 calls scheduled. There's no way that I can go back and talk to that individual. What I will do is get back to that individual at the first available opportunity, but it's not going to be tonight. And it turned out not to be the next night, and it turned out not to be the next night after that. When I finally got back to him, his complaint was that obviously I wasn't taking his burglary seriously if I couldn't get back to him as quickly as I wanted to. This was before the days of cell phones.
Well, and that's why today law enforcement agencies, many, seek to have a victim assistance unit so that the police officer can focus on the apprehension, the arrest, and all of that of the person who is charged with or should be charged with a crime, and in fact the victim can have the communication and referrals perhaps to other support services in their community through a non-enforcement person, a law enforcement person, but someone who is in the victim assistance unit, and that's one of the things we're encouraging in every law enforcement community to do today.
All three of us have been discussing this concept of victimology for 3 decades now, and in some cases it's longer than 3 decades. Are we ever going to get to the point where a program like this becomes a moot point? Again, I emphasize that if we violate the rights of a perpetrator, we are immediately, you know, that case is dismissed. We are held to disciplinary review. You know, are we ever going to get to the day where this conversation is not necessary?
That's my vision. That's my dream. And I would encourage any of your listeners to call us on the toll-free number. If we can't provide the direct assistance, we can certainly make the proper and appropriate referral. But most people don't know that they have that right to seek a remedy. And that's where we have to fill that gap.
That's my goal as well, Lynn. I've promoted victims' rights and victims' issues as a chief of police, as a corrections commissioner. Now I have the opportunity to do it in academia, and UMUC has given me the tools to do this worldwide. And so I guess all I can say is I'm going to do everything in my power to do it, and people like Roberta Roper are just an absolute inspiration to me. And if we keep doing this, I think we will get there one day.
We're going to follow up with the contact numbers one more time, and these contact numbers will be in the show notes. Bill Sondervan is Executive Director for the Center for Criminal Justice Administration. His email is wsondervan, S-O-N-D-E-R-V-A-N, at umuc.edu. University of Maryland University College is what Bill is in charge of in terms of the criminal justice program. Roberta Roper is Chair of the Maryland Crime Victims Resource Center, and Roberta is shy. She is a national figure in terms of this concept of victims' rights. So it's just not Maryland. It is throughout the country, and Roberta's had an impact throughout the world, I do believe, on criminal justice issues. R-R-O-P-E-R at mdcrimevictims.org is the email address, www.mdcrimevictims.org. Again, I emphasize that they are willing to help anybody out. It's just not Maryland. 1-877-VICTIM-1, 1-877-VICTIM-1. And if it goes beyond the Maryland, you can always try the National Organization for Victim Assistance, which is www.trynova.org. And I remembered that from my programs with the National Organization for Victim Assistance. I want to remind everybody, a National Day of Remembrance, September 25th, 2009. I know these programs live way beyond 2009, but for this case, it's September 25th, 2009 in Washington, D.C. The 800 number is 1-800-438-6233, 1-800-438-6233. Again, we'll have this information within the show notes. Any final words, Roberta or Bill? Did we cover everything?
Well, we never cover everything, but I just wanted to remind your listeners that this Day of Remembrance is an annual event, always on September the 25th. So while you gave information for the 2009 event, it will occur every year.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Bill, wrap up.
I think that the show is an excellent idea to do just like we talked about, to keep victims' rights and victims' issues in the forefront of everybody's mind, and have people think about them and not just let it be an afterthought.
Amen. Amen to both. And ladies and gentlemen, we really appreciate you listening into this program. This is DC Public Safety. We are on 177,000 times a month, according to statistics, for the month of July. You can reach me at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, .Sipes, S-I-P, not T, but P-E-S, at C-S-O-S-A.gov. I work for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in Washington, D.C. You can follow me on Twitter at Twitter, TWITTER/LenSipes, or comment in the comments box on the four websites that we have for DC Public Safety. And I want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.